Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of Midwest Madness, your true crime cult conspiracy encrypted podcast. I'm Emily.
And I'm Danielle.
This isn't our, we've recorded since the new year, right?
Yeah. Yes, I think that because we took the little break.
Yeah.
And then we came back because it's the third week of the month, weekend of the month, so.
I feel like it's been a long time.
A really long time.
Since we recorded, but it literally was 2 weeks ago, so. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, 2 weeks in a day, because normally we do.
Well, you're getting into the nitty gritty.
I know, but maybe that's why it feels longer is what I'm trying to say.
Maybe. If you're in Minnesota right now, I hope you're staying warm.
It's like.
Because it's freezing outside.
It's like, what, negative 15 or something without the wind chill?
I think the high today was like negative 7.
Yeah, something like that.
Which is crazy.
Ridiculous cold.
I read that this is the coldest day we've had in like 9 years or something.
Really?
Yeah. Or it's supposed to be.
Okay. I was going to say, because remember, well, actually, that might have been before COVID. Because I think I was definitely working at a school, but I don't think I was at the elementary school. We had like some negative 60 days. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was a really long time ago, though.
Doesn't feel that long ago.
I think I was still in college.
Okay, so. And I suppose if it was pre-COVID, then. But I definitely was working at a school, so. Yeah. It must have been the high school.
So, anyway. Stay warm, I hope.
Yeah.
And.
Will your car to start if you have to go somewhere?
Yeah.
I can't even
tell you how many times I've had to fill my tires with air.
Oh, yeah.
It's like weekly.
Yeah, mine need to be filled again. And I'm like, not today.
I know, I need to fill mine too. Fuck.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
I'm not doing it today. It's not happening.
I have to, so.
Yeah, I should. I should. It's bad for your
bad
car
for your
not to.
Tires,
but
yeah.
It's so cold.
Yeah. So, anywho.
Well, Sirius probably just picked the loudest way he possibly could have.
Oh, can you get it away from
me?
Take
it.
Yeah.
Mom says no. Mom says no.
Have a story this week, obviously, that I'm going to be telling. And I'm in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
I know we didn't really talk about where we were.
No, we didn't.
Or anything like that. But, yeah. So, I'm going to be in the state of Wisconsin this week. I'm going to be telling the story of a young University of Madison student who was... University of Madison? What the hell? University of Wisconsin Madison.
Got it.
Student who was murdered back on campus in 1968.
Oh, so an oldie.
Yeah, but some people believe that her murder could quite possibly be linked to others. So.
Oh, so possible serial killer connection.
But I'll be...
Interesting.
I will warn you right now, there is going to be a part two to this episode.
Hot diggity damn, our first one ever.
Yeah, like this is going to conclude, and then I'm going to tell the story of the serial killer.
Okay.
Next.
Okay.
So it won't be our next episode because Danielle will obviously be next.
It'll be your
next episode. Okay. So 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing part two of this story. So
okay, so what I'm hearing is buckle up, buddy.
Well, I mean, it's not.
Okay, it's not that bad.
Crazy, but
okay,
it's interesting. So on May 25th, 1968, a young family was taking a drive through the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. And I guess this was like a thing that families used to do back then when the weather wasn't very nice on Sundays, is they would drive around and visit three of the local UW campuses. So like La Crosse, Whitewater, UW-Madison, I know there were some others. But they like to take in the architecture and the landscape that they offered. So
okay.
If it was raining, they'd be like, let's hop in the car and go for a ride, which is interesting.
I mean, our parents used to do that too, just not... They would, like, go to Superior or whatever and drive around. Or Duluth.
Yeah.
So.
Shoot. Anyway. I hit a wrong button.
Oh, did you hate that?
Yeah. Okay. So, while the family was driving through the UW-Madison campus near the physics building known as Sterling Hall, a young boy in the backseat of the car made a passing comment about a mannequin that had been discarded in the grass near a hedgerow.
It's never a mannequin.
Sometimes it is.
98% of the time, it's not a mannequin.
The parents in the car dismissed the boy's comment, but 4 hours later, when this family had long returned to their home, a senior science student named Phil Van Valkenburg had gone to Sterling Hall to do some work. He was a part-time lab assistant, so he was very familiar with the building and the shortcuts he could take to get to the lower-level labs quickly. So when he cut through the hedges, a path he had taken many times, he had made a gruesome discovery. That mannequin that the family had dismissed 4 hours before was actually the remains of 18-year-old Christine Rothschild. Her body had been left to the elements all day, but investigators could tell that it had been placed there very specifically. Her head was resting on a cement ledge of the foundation of the building, so it was like right outside of like picture lower level basement. There's windows, right? Yeah. And then there's like a ledge, a tiny little ledge. So the window is ground level, and then there's that like little ledge.
Yeah.
Cement ledge. Okay. So her head was resting on that. And she had a calling card of sorts with a man's cotton handkerchief that had been tied beneath her head. She had been brutally beaten, both sides of her jaw shattered, and her face had been pulverized. The first blow to her head with a blunt object had likely been hard enough that the only mercy in this would be that Christine had likely not felt anything that had been done to her after. Her leather gloves that she had been wearing were found stuffed inside of her mouth. And she had also been stabbed 14 times with some obscure type of finely sharpened weapon that was described by police as some sort of type of medical utensil, like a surgical scalpel, per se.
That seems like a really small thing to be stabbing with. Because isn't the blade only like...
I have no idea.
I'm trying to think of what we used in elementary school when we did like dissection.
I mean, I don't know if there's different types of scalpels or not.
I suppose. Because that's whenever anybody says a surgical scalpel, that's what I think of, is something really small but really sharp.
Yeah. Phil ran to call the campus police, and two officers, Roger Golem and Tiny Frey. I keep wanting to say Tina, but it's Tiny.
Oh.
Arrived at the scene in less than a minute. Whoa. Unfortunately for Christine, though, they had not handled the scene correctly, trampling through it, destroying evidence, and not containing the scene from the gaggle of students who had appeared.
Oh, no.
This is going to really piss you off.
Uh-oh.
Because it pissed me off. When the ambulance arrived, medics noticed that rigor mortis had yet to set in. The UW campus police, again having no real training in any of this, let the medics grab Christine's body by her hands and feet and carried her hammock style down a slippery embankment before they literally threw her body into the back of the ambulance where she landed in a heap. No gurney, no blanket.
I'm sorry. Fucking what?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
This is not the 20s. This is the 60s. You know better by now.
Yeah, and you would assume that like the medics are better trained than that, and the police, but...
Oh my God.
The medics then transported her body to the UW campus hospital, which was like literally, I think I read it was like 150 feet away. It was very close.
Interesting.
Where her death was immediately pronounced. The investigation into this case was botched immediately.
Obviously.
But that doesn't mean that we don't have some clues about who this might be.
Okay.
Feeling mentally drained, struggling to focus or stay sharp, especially during this time of year where the days are short and cold. Meet Magic Mind, the natural performance booster packed with ingredients like matcha, lion's mane, and adaptogens to help you unlock your brain's full potential.
Just one shot and you'll feel a boost in focus, clarity, and productivity without the jitters or crash. Perfect for tackling long workdays, study sessions, or creative projects.
I've been using the mental performance shots each morning in addition to my daily routine for the past few weeks, and I can definitely say that the 2 to 3 p.m. crash that I typically encounter have vanished completely. I know, I think we can all
I call it the 2 p.m. sleepies.
Yeah. I'm able to stay on task and productive without having to drain 3 cups of coffee a day like I typically have to.
Three cups, Emily?
I still have my morning cup of Joe, don't get me wrong, but I don't have to continue drinking it like I used to.
You normally would have 3 cups?
And because I struggle with insomnia, I'm very excited to be able to try their sleep performance shots next.
And we also both love that Magic Mind donates 5 cents for each bottle sold to mental health charities that help U.S. homeless communities. So we do have a limited time offer for our listeners who want to try a natural form of energy in the new year. Visit Magic Mind, that's one word, magicmind.com, and use our code MWMadness20 at checkout and get 48% off of your first subscription or 20% off of a one-time purchase.
Okay, so Christine was a woman of routine. So every morning at 7 a.m., she would walk on campus where she would stop outside the university hospital to smoke with medical residents and staff. She would then end her route at the drugstore either on State Street or University Drive. During one of these breaks, a medical resident by the name of Niels Jorgensen, who was 42 at the time, spotted her. And Jorgensen was known to have liked young college girls and bonus points if they were blonde, tall, and affluent, which Christine was blonde and tall, and I don't know, so I don't know much about the affluent part, but
maybe just dressed well so she looked like it.
Well, give me like two sentences and I think we'll understand a little bit more. So one morning, Jorgensen introduced himself to Christine, and when he learned that her last name was Rothschild, he mistook her as related to the notable European Rothschild family. So I think that's maybe a part of it. Christine immediately didn't trust Jorgensen, even though he was tall, had blonde hair, blue eyes, athletic build, like relatively handsome. She just was getting like bad vibes.
She got the ick.
Yeah. Which, always trust your gut.
Amen to that.
She felt he was strange and cold to his peers. So from that moment forward, she tried to steer clear of him as much as possible. But it didn't take long for his attraction to Christine to become full-blown obsession with her.
Yuck.
So again, not long after meeting Christine, she began receiving prank phone calls from a silent caller. One day, she saw a man standing outside her dorm window watching her. Jorgensen once followed Christine to Memorial Library, where she regularly studied.
Because all of these things are going to make a girl want to date you.
To ask her on a date, but she declined.
God, what a freak.
It didn't take long for the silent phone calls to become threatening. The stalking also escalated to a point where everywhere Christine looked, she saw Jorgensen there.
Yuck. That's going to be so terrifying.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Just like the anxiety you feel anytime you leave your house.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And even you're not even safe at home because he's calling.
Well, somebody's outside her window.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to assume it's probably safe to assume it's him.
Yeah, more than likely. Oh, God.
Because of this, Christine became anxious and she rarely smiled. In early May of 1968, so this was shortly before her murder, Christine returned to her home in Chicago to speak with her mother about transferring to Vassar College that fall because she desperately wanted to leave Madison. Her mother refused to let her transfer, and Christine returned to Madison after a huge fight with her mom, Patria. It's P-A-T-R-I-A, Patria, where Christine sobbed and told her that she hated her. Two days later, her parents had decided to let her transfer and were going to surprise her at her end of the year celebration. However, tragedy struck before they were able to do so.
Oh, that's so sad.
Well, Christine returned to campus. When Christine returned to campus, she spotted two UW-Madison campus police, Tiny Frey and Roger Golub, which we remember were the two
that helped find the body. The law enforcement that found the body.
And she decided that she wanted to finally report Jorgensen's harassment of her. But the two officers didn't seem concerned about the behavior, and instead of doing anything about it, they told her to buy a whistle to help protect herself. They never even wrote a report about the harassment.
And it's a really good thing we're not on YouTube, because my facial expressions right now, holy shit.
When they got to the crime scene 2 days later and recognized Christine's body,
they went, oh, fuck.
They decided to keep quiet about the fact that she had approached them days before in fear of losing their jobs.
Emily!
It was determined that the crime had likely occurred around 7 a.m. that morning, and they did send Christine's clothing and such out for testing to see if any DNA could be found, but all the blood evidence on Christine was her own.
So we weren't completely incompetent. We were just 98% incompetent.
Apparently.
Great.
Police thought maybe some of the hospital staff may know something, as it was her routine, obviously, to walk that route every morning. And she had been found, oh yeah, just 150 feet from the hospital.
Right.
But no one ever came forward to claim they saw anything. The day after Christine's murder, Jorgensen was fired from his medical residency. He briefly lived in Michigan, Philly, and New York City after the murder, and it was in NYC that investigators visited him and asked for an interview. The day they showed up, Jorgensen claimed that he was ill and asked if they could do the interview the next day. Police agreed, and when they showed up the next day to conduct the interview, Jorgensen had fled.
Shock.
He moved back to California and lived with his mother. Now, I don't know why they didn't just, like,
go to California.
Yeah. I couldn't find anything about any of this. I do know that they had, again, they do have another suspect, which I will be doing in my part two.
Okay.
And I also don't want to point out first. Actually, let me just finish and then I'll point out.
Okay. Shit. Okay. But I was going to say, are we done or do we have more? Okay.
So Linda was Christine's good friend, and she was the only one who seemed adamant that Jorgensen was responsible for the murder. She has spent decades going back and forth to Madison trying to get justice for her friend, but unfortunately, she has been unsuccessful so far.
That is a real friend right there.
Yeah. There are other people out there, however, who believe that Christine could have been the first victim of a serial killer who would hunt women on the University of Madison, Wisconsin-Madison's campus from 1968 to 1984, when 8 women would be murdered.
Whoa!
The killer or killers never have been caught. So I'm going to list below the list of the other women and give a brief explanation of their crimes, but...
The crimes against them.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I'm not going to go into more detail because obviously I'm going to cover it next week or next 2 weeks.
Yep.
So Deborah Bennett, 1976-20. Her body had been set on fire and left in a ditch a few miles from Cross Plains. This is unsolved. So all these are unsolved.
Okay.
Julie Ann Hall, 1978. After being bludgeoned to death, her body was found buried near Wanakee. Julie Spearschneider, 1979. She was 20. Missing for 2 years before her skeletal remains were discovered in the town of Dunn in 1981. Shirley Stewart, 1980. She was 17. Found in a wooded area in the town of Westport in 1980, a year after she went missing. Susan Lee Mihu, 1980. She was 24. Found in the University of Wisconsin Arboretum in 1980. Donna Mraz, 1982. She was 19. Stabbed to death near Camp Randall Stadium in 1982 while on her way home from her waitress job at a State Street restaurant. Janet, 1985-20. Her body was found partially burnt in 1985 near a highway 100 miles north of Madison after being reported missing for over a month. In 2022, her death was ruled accidental. So
okay.
Take that with a case. I don't know. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Brittany Zimmerman. Oh, sorry. That was it. The next two are also, actually, it's people you have, someone you did a story on. So I'm not going to go into that one. Not serial killer.
Oh, okay.
So again, not going into much details onto these cases because I am going to go into a deep dive into this theory of the serial killer in part two of the episode next week or 2 weeks from now. So stay tuned for that. We do know that, again, Christine's murder has never been solved. Linda did do a podcast actually about her friend and this case. Let me see if I can find it. I should have written it down.
Did you listen to it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't have time.
That's really, really busy. Fair.
I'm gonna be busy for the next 14 weeks. So.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, let me see if I can find the name of her podcast really fast. It's in one of my sources, so need to
figure out which source it was.
Yeah. Has it listed?
Right. That's like sometimes the tricky part. You're like, ah, crap. I know I read it somewhere.
Yeah.
Which one was it? It's like, I feel like, what should I talk about while we, while you look? It's really cold and...
You don't need to fill it space.
No, I do.
No, you don't.
It's, otherwise it's weird.
No, you don't.
Your one sticker, your "this is the skin of a killer" Bella makes me laugh so hard every time I see it.
Thanks.
That was a good find. It's rainbow fish, you guys.
Okay. Linda, Linda, Linda. Here you are, Linda.
Listen, Linda.
Linda, honey.
Do you remember how obsessed Tom was with that for a while?
Yeah. Sorry.
Do you know how long the podcast, like how many episodes it is? Is it like a one season thing?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
So she did write a book.
Oh, okay. So we have a book and a podcast.
Called Murder on the 56th Day. I can't find the name of the podcast, though.
Well, we can put it in the show notes if you find it. That's not a big deal.
Christine. I should have written it down, but...
I mean, it happens.
I'm not perfect.
What? Shattered my image of you, Emily. I'm
Christine Oth Rothschild Podcast. Ooh.
Are there a lot?
You killed Chris.
You killed Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Chris with a K?
Nope, C.
Okay. So you killed C-H-R-I-S?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good to know. I will add that to my to listen to.
So there we go. That is my episode. Stay tuned.
Part one.
For the next part where I go talk about the potential serial killer that this could be linked to.
Okay.
And my sources were AETV.com, AmericanGhostWalks.com, and TrueCrimeDiva.com. It was actually kind of hard to find, like, a whole lot of information about this case, but...
Interesting.
I did my best, so... There we go.
All right, our socials are MWMadnessPodcast at Gmail. That is also our Instagram. And we are on Facebook at Midwest Madness Podcast Group. And then just a reminder, if you want to try the Magic Mind energy shots or the, what were they? They were called sleep shots.
Mental performance and sleep performance.
Okay, that's what I thought. And that was at magicmind.com. And our code was MWMadness20 at checkout.
All right, guys. Have a great rest of your week. Stay warm, and we'll see you. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye.